talk to someone sane for a I'm not saying the Premier wasn't, but someone who isn't a politician, is Dr. Rose Phillips, the group executive, the soon-to-be author, can't wait for the book to come out, the medical doctor, and very importantly, the futurist. Rose, how are you?
Hello, Kino. I am good, thank you. Hello, Kino. Hello, listeners. How's your blood pressure?
It's okay. It's getting there. It's coming down nicely. Thank heavens I took my Losartan and my Rydac this morning. So I'm doing fine, Rose. Thank you. I'm almost thinking maybe this is what we should be discussing.
Well, we will, in a sense, because we're going to talking about leadership, right?
So, exactly.
You know, the Premier was talking about dignity and well-being of society and a cohesive United Nation, which really is music to my ears. But then we have to act appropriately and act accordingly, right? We can't just talk about it. So it's a 100%. Great introduction to the topic on leadership, because I honestly believe that leadership is about being responsive. It's about being response-able, and I'm glad that people are coming and talking and communicating, as you had quite rightly said. But I also believe, probably more importantly, that leadership is about being responsible.
Absolutely. It's about, and we'll be talking about the lessons, right, through the eyes of an HR director. But that HR director could pretty much be anybody else in leadership. I mean, the HR director relates obviously to the organization and the organizational dynamics that falls under her or his purview. But I do think this discussion will be broadened out as well. So where do we start with this, Rose? You know, we talk about the lessons that COVID-19 have taught us. And let's look at this through the eye of the HR director.
Yeah, thanks, Kino. So, you know, a lot of time we talk about leadership and leaders say, you know, their priority is the customer. But in fact, that's not in my mind true. The job of a leader is to be responsible for the people who are responsible for the customers, right? Really, their employees. And so I wanted to dedicate today's show really to the employees of the world, and particularly the employees of AFSA, because as an HR director, I've served there for 2 years now, and I served during the time of COVID. And I, you know, as there are so many books on leadership, and there are so many types of leaders, as many books as there are types of leaders, and I guess I'm old enough to have my own perspective on leadership. And I really wanted to almost, I thought of today and thought about the absolute journey that we went through during COVID, and the nuggets that I picked up during that time, and the choices and the decisions that we needed to make, that really then, for me, shaped what a leader really ought to be. And I've come up with 12 attributes that I thought that were important. And that's what I really wanted to share with our listeners today.
Well, you've been patient with us. We'll be patient. And as a matter of fact, we don't even need to be patient. We're always enthralled when you give us your insights. So let's get straight into them.
Yeah, and this is not to talk too much about AFSA, so let me just put out a health warning. But the organization did win some significant awards for leadership, for resilience, for the way that we showed up in terms of business continuity, the way that we have done our corporate communication strategy. We've won an award for that as well. But it's not really about the awards. As I say, it's about the work that needs to be done. It's about, you know, walking the talk. That's what really the topic of conversation is about. So for me, sort of the first thing, Kino, that I learned, and I've been saying this all along, right, that to truly unlock the digital dividend of the fourth industrial revolution, we keep talking about it. And now I'm talking about more than just COVID. To do that, you have to combine the intelligence of machines with the ingenuity of humans. I'm talking about ingenuity. I'm talking about creativity. I'm talking about problem solving. I'm talking about collaboration. I am talking about sense making. We really have to unlock our humanity. That's what I learned during this COVID period as part of the organization. So that for me is attribute one. And when you do that, then you unlock efficiency. You do unlock productivity for the leaders out there who are running businesses, but you also do unlock innovation and you unlock exponential growth. And more importantly, and this takes me to attribute number two, you unlock resilience. And last week or two weeks ago, we were talking about post-COVID stress disorder, right?
That's
and we
right,
were
yes.
talking about how resilience of individuals and resilience of organizations are so important to carry you through this unpredictability that has come and will probably happen again. There'll be something else. There'll be another crisis that hits us. And how do you build that ability to manage stress, that mental resilience, as they call it, character, grit, perseverance, endurance. In Xhosa, they call it Nyamazela. There's actually the Guguletu tenors have a song called Nyamazela that you can listen to. So resilience is another attribute that leaders need to have. And what is resilience in my mind, mm-hmm. which what I picked up during the time, is leaders who are empathetic, leaders who are adaptable, and as you quite rightly said, this doesn't have to be organizational leaders. These can yep. be political leaders as well.
Absolutely.
So political leaders also think about how we build resilient societies and what does it mean to build a resilient society. Empathy, adaptability, self-awareness, Kino. Self-awareness
yes.
is so important. Take risks, but be calculated, to be responsible about the risks that you take. I always
exactly.
say, you want to be a futurist, you have to be optimistic and you have to be positive, right? There's no place in the world for pessimists. So positivity is the right attitude to have for a resilient human being. Be effective in communications, and lastly, be helpful. Be helpful.
Yeah.
I mean, the Premier was talking about dignity and well-being and cohesive nation. You cannot do that if you're a selfish human being. Be helpful. Serve. So that's the second attribute, is about resilience.
Absolutely.
I don't want this to be a monologue. So
No. I'm listening to you because, you know what? I you know, I've got my thoughts on HR and the role that HR plays, but that's more of a technical thing. But I mean, when we talk about how it relates to human beings, I think it can be driven by much better intelligence. I think HR in particular, the way we have it at the moment, it's a bit of a dinosaur in the way it works. It's a function of management. Nobody trusts HR, or very few people trust HR, because, you know, HR is a function of management. And HRs in a lot of organizations are perceived to be biased.
Biased towards management and policy driven.
Absolutely right. So, you know, with all the stuff that we're discussing this morning here, Rose, that is something. And if we're only going to be talking if we just talk about this from a business contextual perspective, right? That is something that desperately needs to be dealt with. That's the one thing, just the perception of HR within the organization. But then there's what type of data you base your decisions and the actions that emanate from HR on. Are we getting the right type of information, the intelligence, from the people we seek to hire? And I've said this before, are we only looking at CVs? And are we still having this idea that whatever happens at home needs to stay at home, which I think is the biggest nonsense in the world, quite frankly.
Yeah, number one. And number two, you are only as good as your qualifications. So all of those things are myths that aren't necessarily true. And that's not the topic. I mean, we could talk actually only about the topic of resilience, but that's not the intention.
Absolutely.
Because resilience is not a qualification. Resilience is a life experience.
Exactly.
And so for me, in my role as an HR professional, and I've got great respect, and I mean, 2 years in the job, I've got great respect for the work that HR professionals do. We now have to look more broadly at what are the qualities, not the qualifications only. Of course, it's important. You have to have
yes.
a technical qualification when you join an organization. But what are the qualities we need in leaders of tomorrow? And leaders of tomorrow aren't the CEOs only, right? Every individual
yep.
is a PTY limited. You are
Absolutely.
A leader, whether you are a junior
Absolutely.
Or whether you are senior. That's how we change society, when we all take responsibility for our own leadership. But then we have to look for those kind of attributes as well. So, for example, in my organization, I would say if somebody comes from a rural area, I want to listen to their story because in that story sits resilience. And that's why the role of HR has to change. It has to be an enabler of change. If we're going to say human ingenuity is so important, then the people who represent the humans have to put the people first and make sure that the people are represented in the boardroom.
So we are chatting to Dr. Rose Phillips, who obviously is a group executive for People and Culture at APSA. She's a futurist, she's a medical doctor, and she is one hot shot radio presenter as well, as you can hear. And we'll be chatting to her after our news. And we'll talk about the resilience. We'll talk about all of that. But why is it that we have to, and it's a decision we've taken as a business. I've said this before, that you don't need a matric to come and work there. You have so many corporates who still say you need a matric to come and work. Now, if an 18-year-old is resilient, a 19-year-old is resilient, has the aptitude, has the attitude, has gone beyond what a matric could teach him or her, we are still telling them, sorry, you can't come work here because some piece of paper, which is taught you the same way that people have been taught for 150 years, is a prerequisite to get there. So we'll come back. Let's go to Dr. Rose Phillips. How's it, Rose?
Right, thank you.
Sorry about that. Talk to me. It was a good conversation. It was needed.
No,
anyway.
And in fact, actually, you know what? I think it was important for our listeners to hear this in the context of what we're talking about. Because if you know everything, you can learn nothing. And
absolutely.
Dialogue is important. And you have the right to offend, right? You have the right to offend.
Yep.
That's the power of dialogue and the power of conversation. So people shouldn't sit there and cringe. They should say, wonderful, two people are having an open conversation.
Absolutely.
And are feeling comfortable enough to challenge.
No, I think we respect each other dearly, and we don't mind having conversations like these. And I, just from where I stand, you know, people expect, because I happen to be non-white and because I happen to come from Elsie's River, because I need to hold a particular view. Yeah. The reality is that no matter who you are and where you come from, it is very likely that you're going to hold a different view to someone else, and that you're not going to box yourself in, you know, the same type of contexts that other people find themselves in. And that is healthy for a democracy at the end of the day, in an organization, anywhere else as well.
Identity is not one-dimensional.
Absolutely.
We should never think of identity as one-dimensional. We are all multidimensional humans. And that takes me to the next one, attribute number three. And I recognize we can't keep talking forever, so I'll just go through some of them because we're not going to be able to cover all 12.
No problem.
You know my obsession with learning, right, Kino? And you know, I talk now about, if you know everything, you can learn absolutely nothing. So you need the humility to recognize you don't know everything, and you need to use the opportunity to learn. And I really believe that learning is the gift that you give your future self. It's amidst all this uncertainty and the chaos that we're living through, the unpredictability and the complexity of the world, because it really enhances our relevance and it enhances the dialogues that we are able to have. So for me, as attribute number four, really, really appreciating learning. And when I went through this experience with APSA people, it's really quite interesting what people are doing when we focus on learning. The highest uptake now for people in a learning context in organizations like the one that I'm in is not so much about technical courses. Yes, people want to know about coding, but interestingly enough, what people really want to know about is personal mastery. People want to learn about purpose. People want to learn about how to lean into uncertainty. They want to learn about mindfulness. They even want to do master classes on exercise and nutrition, which really, really demonstrates, again, how people are focused on self and how people are focused on resilience, and that resilience really is becoming as important as revenue, which takes me to attribute four, which is, while we're living in a digital world, ultimately we might be digitally powered, but we have to be people-led. People-led, ultimately, because it's the humans that make the ultimate decision. So that, for me, is attribute number four.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to cover attribute number five, but I want to go to attribute number six.
Yeah.
And attribute number six really talks about, a lot of companies said that they survived COVID. The ones that really, really did well during COVID were the ones that really had accelerated their digital journeys. Absolutely true. Because obviously when people are working remotely, you've got Microsoft Teams, you've got Zoom, you keep people together completely. But in fact, the companies that have also reduced and moved away from the old school command and control hierarchical way that they ran the organization, where, you know, the top floor has all the answers, to one that's more agile, more flat, more empowering, where everybody has a voice, which of course makes sense because people needed to pivot very fast. Those organizations also did much better during COVID. So that for me is attribute number six. Flatter organizational, more empowering organizations really, really are the way to go into the future. Attribute number seven, and then I'm going to take a little bit of a break. Attribute number seven, I certainly work with EFSA. We decided to lead with a culture of care, to put people first. And that was extremely important. We had to shift from a work-from-home model and focus on wellness of employees. In fact, employees could come to the office and fetch their chairs, fetch their office chairs, fetch their monitors, and take it home and use that to work from. And that takes me to attribute eight, which we then also followed up with care packs that we're sending to 50,000 people to their homes. And for me, attribute eight is, so attribute seven is about the culture of care. Attribute eight is about gratitude is the best attitude to have. Saying thank you to your employees is an extremely important thing to do. Money is important, but meaning is also important. So I'm going to rest there for a little bit and
My blood pressure is perfectly fine. I've got a voice note for you, though. Someone has a question for you in particular. So let's take a listen.
Morning, Kino and Dr. Phillips. Interested to know what Dr. Phillips has gleaned from the medical profession that she can use in her professional life with EFSA.
So what have you learnt about in your medical profession that actually helps you in your job at the moment? I think a very cool question.
Oh, yeah, interesting question. So I think probably the most important thing, two things. Firstly, a personal skill of problem solving, because that's really what medical professionals do. They make sense of things.
Absolutely.
Right? That's the first thing. Secondly, listening. We were always taught, and I learned this in medical school, that if you listen well enough to the story of your patient, you will figure out what is wrong with them without even putting your hand on them. And that's the other thing that I've taken into the business world, the ability to truly listen, because that is important. And then the third thing, which I apply in the HR profession specifically, is that moments matter. You know, you have beautiful moments that you are part of in the medical profession, you know, the birth of a child. And then you have terrible moments that you are part of in the medical profession, when somebody passes away and you see them close their eyes for the last time. And you know that life is extremely precious and the moments matter. So the way I apply it in the context of my job right now is that my most important job is to create very meaningful, differentiating colleague experiences through moments that matter. That's why care packs for me are such important things, because in that moment you are creating a moment of joy. Those would be, I guess, my top three things or top four things that I learned from.
Awesome.
My days.
And I just think it's, you know, some people end up going to university and there's nothing wrong with that, and they study what they do and they start. It's lovely to have people who come from, you know, sort of cross-disciplinary experience into other roles, because there's this depth and richness and also a different perspective that it brings to the job as well.
Yeah, that's why for me career longevity is actually career diversity. You need career diversity for career longevity, and also you need diversity of experiences, ages, culture, etc. in an organization, and you must make the time to listen to people's stories.
We are chatting
in your interview. That's what you have to do.
Without a doubt. Dr. Rose Phillips. Now, Dr. Rose Phillips is medical doctor. She no longer practices, and I don't think. No, you don't. You did tell us you don't practice anymore.
I use my stethoscope differently now.
She is a group executive for people and culture at EFSA and a futurist as well. And we're talking about the lessons of post-COVID, no, actually not post, we're still in it, but the lessons COVID-19 have taught her as an HR director, essentially.